Okay, so the topic that I want to talk about today, this series is on, I forget exactly what we called it, new issues in biotechnology, something, I'm not really sure. I don't know what we called it, new frontiers maybe. It's not so new, but things are changing every day. I did mean to talk to my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law is getting a PhD in genetics and works in genetics, or Paul. But I'm going to see both of them at the wedding tomorrow, or Wednesday. So I didn't get a chance to actually talk to them, but we'll suffice. Now, I should note that technically, in the way people use terminology now, though this is a very new sort of linguistic thing, technically, choosing your child's sex would have been more precise, because sex is used to refer to the biological aspects and gender to the, I don't know what, the other non-aspects. Several old students who are in secular college were like, oh, you're giving sheer on gender identity. I'm like, no, but I'm going to leave gender on it, and I'm just going to leave it. But technically, what we're talking about is different ways of determining what the biological sex of your child will be by using different methods pre-conception that will either, as we'll see, ensure that you have a child of a certain sex, or will increase the likelihood of having a child of a certain sex. And we want to deal with this both from a halachic perspective, hashkafic perspective, as much as we can, an ethical perspective. There's a lot of overlap between those. And that's what we want to take up. I meant to bring it, but I left it at home. There is an excellent new sefer that came out from Machon Pua. It's called Shut Pua. You might want to get your hands on it, which brings together many different shaylot that were posed to by the rabbis at Machon Pua, which is an organization in mostly in Eretz Yisrael, but also outside of Eretz Yisrael, devoted to helping couples deal with fertility issues, both from a medical perspective and a halachic perspective. Questions that they posed to a sort of panel of rabbis across Israel and a little bit outside of Israel, and they just record the background to the question, the halachic background, the medical background, and then they give you a survey of the positions. If you look there, they have a whole chapter on this question. Okay, so what, before we get into the halachic issues, first, what are we even talking about? So there are three basic ways that one can affect the sex of a child. One is what's called, in some of the non-technical literature, the low-tech or at-home methods, which consist of a variety of things. People claim that depending on your diet or the position during intercourse or the timing of intercourse with regard to ovulation, you can help push the probability of having a desired a child of a specific sex in the direction that you want. The problem with this method primarily is the effectiveness of it. It is ballparked at 60% effective, which, considering pure chance gives you 50%, 60% isn't exactly a great improvement over pure chance, but that is the ballpark approximation of what these methods can give you. That's, if you look in the medical literature, Dr. Friedman can tell me if I'm right or wrong, but in the articles I've read, it ballparked it at 60%, which is, you know, maybe slightly outside of the margin of not margin of error, outside of something which is scientifically meaningful, statistical, right? Not so much, but 60%. So that, we're not really, we'll get back to that one, but that's questionable. The two main methods that are discussed, which are more effective than that, so one is what's known as the Erickson method, which basically means what you do is you take sperm, and then using a centrifuge, you separate the quote-unquote fast swimmer sperm, which is the sperm which would cause the child to be male, from the slow sperm, which is a female, in a test tube, and then depending on whether you want a male or a female, you will then implant that directly into the uterus using artificial insemination, or what's known as IUI, intrauterine insemination, to give yourself a better chance. Now that, it's relatively cheap. It runs in the several hundred dollar range to go through that procedure, which is not so terrible. The success is, depending on the literature, ranges between you'll get approximations of between 73 and 85%. So again, we're here, this is definitely better than chance. It's not by any stretch of the imagination an absolute, but it will push you in that direction. Again, the benefits of this, despite its mild success, is that it's relatively cheap and that it's relatively non-invasive. It's a little bit invasive, but it's not as bad as what we're going to get to in just a moment, which is IVF. Right, IVF, in vitro fertilization, is where you create the embryo outside of the womb in a test tube, both using the sperm and the egg, and then you have to reimplant it. Now, this is very, very painful. It is extremely expensive. Can cost about $20,000, $30,000 a round. You know, the woman will have to take hormones, which will increase the number of eggs she produces in a month, which would be extremely painful. Now, then what you'll do is either PGD, PGS, meaning pre-implantation genetic diagnosis or screening, to figure out which of the embryos is male and which is female. Using that, you have 100% success rate. So in that sense, it's better. On the other hand, like I said, it costs $20,000, $30,000 per round, which is prohibitive for most people. So those are the methods that we're even talking about. Now, why would parents care to which sex their child is? So obviously, for some parents, it's preference. They look at Asia and parts of Asia, right? They only want boys. They have another low-tech method, which is called, abortion, or in some cases, infanticide, right? Right, killing the baby. That's a relatively low-tech method, not exactly a good method, but, whatever. That's one reason, but there are more serious reasons. So, for example, gender-linked diseases, right? Many diseases are carried on, or gender-specific, or carried on, let's say, the Y chromosome. So if you know you carry one of those diseases, you might only want to have girls to avoid the potential diseases. That's already a serious reason. Some people who are halachic want to, not just they want to have a boy and a girl, but they want to fulfill the mitzvah peruvu, which we'll come to in just a minute. There was a famous case in Israel, and this was really generated much of the controversy in Israel, was an interesting case where a Kohen was impotent, and his wife was having artificial insemination from a non-Jewish donor, in line with Ramosha's psak that you should use a non-Jewish donor to avoid yichus issues, but especially in Israel where they duchen every day, he wanted that his wife should only have girls so that he wouldn't have to answer questions on a daily basis. Why is your son not coming up to duchen with you? Because he's not your son, right? You don't want that. So he preferred that his wife have girls so that it wouldn't be a public statement every morning. Oh my God, my son is not really my son. So he requested that his wife only they were going through IVF, the donor's sperm should only have female zygotes, or embryos, whatever, zygotes really at that stage, right, whatever, the early stages, implanted into the mother. There also are some people who are concerned, depending on exactly how you paskin in terms of yichud with adopted children, or children who are not biologically your own. People who were concerned about yichud with children that are not halachically your own, some people wanted to, wanted preferences for, let's say, a boy, right? It's a little bit easier, for whatever reason, right? You want to, so the father can be misyache, whatever the case may be. There are people who have such concerns vis-a-vis yichud. Many poskim think this is not an issue at all, but there were poskim who thought it was, and some people prefer specific genders for that reason. So the question came up in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah. That case was not the father. It's not where they had a right. You can, there are different reasons why you might need to go through in general IVF you know, IUI. Sometimes it's simply because there's a problem, you know, he has a low, the husband has this low sperm count. So what you do is then you go through this, right, you get to, let's say you go through IUI just to make sure you get the best sperm to get a better chance of impregnation. Now in that case, the child would be the father's and then there'd be no problem. That particular case was a case where he was impotent and he needed from a guy. So so the child's Jewish,
right,
and is the mother's daughter, but it's not the Kohen's child, because right, the sperm's from some, you know, guy. The child has no father, presumably.
Rav
Moshe Feinstein thinks you should do it from a guy. Right, that's a shir for another time.
Okay.
But yeah, right. Rav Moshe rules to avoid yichus problems.
Right.
If you're doing, you should do it from a guy.
Right.
So this Kohen didn't want everybody to know the child was a guy. Well, it wasn't a guy. Wasn't his son, right? Right, I mean, halachically, the child, according to Rav Moshe, only has a mother and no father, so has no shevet. Right, so he didn't want that everyone know that the child's not a kohen. Right, the child's perfectly kosher, but he wanted to raise the child as his own without everybody every morning saying, "Why is your son not coming up to duchen with you?" Right, so he wanted that his wife should only have daughters. Right, and then he'll raise the child as a, you know, somewhere between an adopted child and his own child. But okay, so there are a lot of questions really to deal with that the poskim deal with here. I mean, we're going to have to break them down. I'm going to try to go through the issues, or at least snapshots of the issues, quickly. We're going to deal with both the halachic concerns, both in favor and against, and then some of the ethical concerns, mostly against, and then see what the poskim actually said. So let's start with the Puruvu one, because that's like the, at first glance, you might think, well, that would be the most justifiable reason, right? We haven't yet gotten to why there might be a problem with choosing the sex of your child, but whatever problem there might be of this list, seemingly the most sort of halachic reason that would justify choosing the sex of your child would be that you want to be Mekayim for Revu, right? You have, I don't know, as we'll see, different posts will give you different numbers, you have four boys already, right? And now you want a girl, right? You want to be Mekayim for Revu. So you say, look, I'm willing to go through, I have no problem having children, right? I just have problem having girls, so I'm willing to go through these somewhat or very invasive, expensive procedures to make sure that I'm a Kayim Peruvu. What could be wrong with that? So the question you really have to ask is, well, are you obligated to do that at all, right? I mean, in order to say that that's a halachic, you know, sort of motivation to do this and override whatever other problems we'll get to, you have to assume that there's any halachic reason to do this. Now, is that true? So, you look at the source. You look at number three. So, the Mishnah tells us, "Lo yivata lam imperia v'riv yoelam ken yesh lo banim." You can't stop having children unless you have, right? You can't stop trying to have children, stop procreating unless you already have children. Now, how many children do you need? So, Beishamay omrim shnei zacharim, Beishamay omrim zachar nekeva. So Beishamai says you need two boys, and Beishamai says a boy and a girl, and that's what he paskin. The Gemara gives a variety of different positions that are alternatives to Mishnah. Tanya, Rabbi Nasan, Omer, Beishamai, Omer, Mishnei, Zachar, Mishnei, Nekevas. Beishamai says two and two. Beishamai, Omer, Zachar, Nekeva. Beishamai says one and one. And Tanya, Idach. And another Brisa, you get Rabbi Nasan, Omer, Beishamai, Omer, Zachar, Nekeva. In another Brisa, Beishamai says boy and girl. Beishamai, Omer, O Zachar or Nekeva. Mishael says you need only one child, either or. And then the Gemara tries to explain, why would you say one, why would you say the other? So I'm a Rava, my time in the Rami Nasan, leave it to Beisilel. Shneamar LaTobra, LaShevet Yitzerav, Vavet LaShevet. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says that the world was not created to be desolate, it was created to be populated, and even if you had one child, so you populated the world, so you're Yotzei. So at first glance, you might say, oh, well, yeah, the mitzvah is to have a boy and a girl, right? That's how we paskin, like Beis Hillel, a boy and a girl. But that's far from obvious, because the Gemara continues and has several halachos that are very difficult to understand. The Gemara says, itmar hayu lo banim biyosa ovid kochavim v'nizgayer, if you had children when you were not Jewish, and then you converted, so Rabbi Yochanan omar ki impir v'yorivya. Rabbi Yochanan said, you already fulfilled pervu. Reish Lakish Amar Loki Imperi Revi. Reish Lakish says you don't. Now, as all the poskim know, all the Rishonim know already, Rabbi Yochanan's position, Reish Lakish makes a lot of sense. You had children and you were not Jewish and you weren't obligated in Peruvu, so you weren't Yotze, you didn't fulfill your obligation. But how could Rabbi Yochanan say that you fulfilled your obligation of Peruvu when you were not Jewish, if it's a mitzvah that only applies to Jews? So hold that thought. The Gemara continues. What? We're going to come back to that in just a minute, right? And we're going to try to figure it out. But let's just highlight the oddities of the mitzvah. So Itmar Hayu Lo Banim Umesu. Let's say you had children, they died. So Huna Admar Kiyum Piruvir of your Huna said you fulfilled Piruvu. Look, you had a boy and a girl. You were Yotzei. Riochan Amar Lo Kiyum, and Riochanan says you didn't. So Huna Amar Kiyum Mishum De Ravasi and Ravasi and Be David Bach Yichlu Kol Hashem Shavuuf. Ravasi said, how do I know you're Yotzei? How do I know you fulfill it? Because Mashiach won't come until all the souls in heaven, whatever that means, are used up. And even if you had a child and the child died, this soul came into the world, and therefore you fulfilled your obligation. Yochanan said, look, you need the world to be settled, and now it isn't, because the children have passed away. Ditanya, and then the Gemara continues, that Rabbi Shua Omer, Nasa Adam Bialduso, Yisisha Bikiziknuso, even if you were married young, you should get married again when you're old, if your wife passed away. If you had children when you were young, you should have more children when you get older. You don't know which one will be successful, so you should keep having more children. So, the mitzvah pruvu is a bit weird, right? On the one hand, most mitzvot in the Torah, either you did it or you didn't do it, right? And you always have to do it at a time when you're obligated. But Puravu, according to Rabbi Yochanan, you can fulfill when you're a non-Jew and then you convert, right? If you fulfill the mitzvah and then the child died, suddenly you didn't fulfill the mitzvah. So this causes everyone to ask, well, maybe Puravu is different than most mitzvah. Now, what would that be? So the Minchas Chinuch famously claims, right? This is like the most quoted Minchas Chinuch in the world. Also, the least likely to be correct, according to all Rishonim, but that's not the point. It is actually the point. It's very much the point. The Rishonim says in number 4 that Mishi Yesh Lo Ben Michal Mokom Poter is Eishes Ovid Min Hayibum. If you have a son, even if the child is a mamzer, that's what Michal Mokom means in this context, so it exempts your brother, or your father's brother, whatever, from Yibum. And if you just skip to the second line of that, to the Gemara, Biavin Boy Ubno Lecholdavar Afil Peruviravya, you even fulfill the mitzvah Peruvu with a mamzer. So the Rishonim already ask, well, how could you fulfill the mitzvah of procreation, right, with a mamzer? That means that presumably you committed one of the Yisuri Araya, and that's how you had a child as a mamzer. Now, this is not actually true, right? There is a way out, right? You could just say that the Gemara is telling you that even if a mamzer has a child, he fulfills Peruvu. But most Rishonim don't understand it that way. They assume this means that even if you committed adultery, let's say, and the child is a mamzer, you fulfill the mitzvah peruvu. So Rishonim will ask, how do you fulfill mitzvah peruvu? There's a normal rule that mitzvah baba avera, if you do a mitzvah through an avera, so you're not yotzei, you don't fulfill your obligation. So the Minchas Chinuch, taking all this data, and the first Minchas Chinuch says, Nihi da mitzvah shel banim bal yidei avera, to be a zisser, even though it's true, you perform an avera in order to have children. Mikol makom ha mitzvas asei haynu abanim. The mitzvah isn't to have intercourse in order to have children. It's the state of being, of having children. It's what we call mitzvah betotza'ah. Right? It's not a mitzvah b'maaseh. It's not an active mitzvah. It's a passive mitzvah. It's a state of being. And here, ubi'ilo hu rak hechsher mitzvah, the sexual intercourse itself is just a necessary prerequisite. V'cheven de'ikur kiyam ha-mitzvah heim ha-bonim, and since the main fulfillment is having the children, uve'eis azos lek avera kal, once the child is born, the avera is long done, da'avera karnases v'shaz ha-bi'ilo, because the avera was done when they actually had intercourse, so then, dami lahotzi matzah mirshus, Hayachid, I don't know why this is mistyped, whatever. Mirshus Hayachid, Mirshus Rabin, Glove Mitzvah Babavera. It's no worse than me violating Shabbos, right? Let's say first day of Pesach is Shabbos, and I carry Matzah and Mirshus Rabin, which I'm Chayav Misa for, and then I go eat it. So, okay, I shouldn't have done that, but when I eat the Matzah, the Avera is long gone, so at least when they put me to death, I can feel comforted that I was Mekayim the Mitzvah of Matzah. And he says it's no different. And the Minchas Chinuch says that Puruvu, of all mitzvahs in the Torah, is unique. The mitzvah isn't to try to have children. It isn't to engage in the sexual act in order to have children. It's having the children And with this, he explains all the data we had before. This is why, if you were a non-Jew and you converted, you had children, you fulfill the mitzvah, because once you converted, right now you're Jewish and you have children alive. Right, so the assumption is that they have to convert as well. Now, even though you're not related to them halachically, still, they exist, and you brought them into this world, and if they were Mizgayer, they're Jews, so you're Mekayim the mitzvah. Why is it that if the children die, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah? Because the mitzvah is to have children, and they're not around. Now, if the Minchas Chinuch is right, so then you can make the argument that, yes, you have a mitzvah to ensure that you have a boy and a girl. And therefore, you might say, okay, that's a halachic reason why if I have four, five, six boys in a row and I want a girl, that it would be mutter, notwithstanding all the other problems, which we haven't even seen yet, right, to determine the sex of the child because it's necessary to be mekayim a mitzvah. However, as much as this Minchas Chinuch is quoted all the time, it is most people actually reject it. By most people, I mean... virtually all the Rishonim, as far as we can tell, and basically all of the Poskim and the Achronim, reject it as well. Not all in Echonami, but most. How do I know? Look at number six. Six, when Tosfos asks the question, how could you be Mikayim the Mitzvah Peruvu when you have a Mamzer? He doesn't say what Tosfos says. He says, V'yish lomar, mishum, d'leka asei, d'efshir labevet, v'od. Leave the first answer aside. The betchilas bia me'aker lav v'lo makayim asei el behotzer zera. The avera is done with penetration, and the mitzvah is fulfilled when he actually ejaculates, and now he can have a child. Meaning, he thinks the mitzvah and the avera are both the sexual act itself. It's just, you know, a difference of, you know, whatever, a few seconds, right? A few minutes, whatever it might be, right? But it's the puravu for Tosos is the act, right? Is the sexual act, not the not having the children. So why would you say? So why is it that you have to keep having children until you have a boy and a girl? All Tosos is saying, right, the way Tosos would understand it, is that's a shear, right? If once you've had a boy and a girl, you're not obligated to keep trying to have children. But the mitzvah is simply to try, right? If the mitzvah is to try, so then, if God wants to give you a million boys, so God gives you a million boys, who says you have to use, right, all these scientific ways to make sure you have a boy and a girl? You do what you do, and God will take care of the rest. Right, the way Rav Dov Lior says it, he quotes a tshuva, which is really strange, but whatever, in the Avni Chayfetz, that you're never obligated to try to fulfill a mitzvah in non-natural ways. Now, there he has a whole... It's a very strange tshuva. In the Avnei Chayfetz, he argues that I'm allowed to make assumptions about whether something's kosher or not kosher, or certain chazakos. I'm allowed to lie at chazakos even if I could pick up the phone and call somebody in the next city and find out the facts. He says, oh, I'm not obligated to use a phone. That's a newfangled device. I can rely on chazaka. That seems to me extremely odd, but the principle seems to be true. I remember someone once asked Rav Lichtenstein, are you obligated to drink coffee so you can be a bigger masman? And he said, no, you're obligated to learn as much as you can. And, you know, you don't have to drug your body with coffee if you don't want to. You want to, do whatever you want, right? But you're not obligated to keep yourself up on, you know, those, I don't know, those five-hour caffeine monstrosities so that you can learn a little bit shtickle more gemara and yeshiva, right? There's no such obligation. Right, Bleich and his shir. Yes, yeah, so that takes you to the mitzvah of Avera, because the mitzvah happens, right? Right, that's how he solves the problem. But the point is that the mitzvah is the maaseh. It's a different part of the maaseh, but it's not the result. As Rabbi Bleich says, he just says it as pointedly as you can. He says, how do I know that puravu is a mitzvah in the action and not the result? So he says, Iba yisem akra, Iba yisem asvara. Right? The svara is, of course it is, because there's no such thing as a mitzvah b'totzah. When did you ever find a mitzvah that you have to bring about a certain result? Mitzvahs, or you have to do certain actions. With the result, you do the best you can. Iba izema kra, what's his proof? This is not exactly a kra, but it's what he points to. And number seven, many people actually point to this, The Gemara in Shabbos, when it says, what are the six questions God will ask you when you go to Shemayim? So I just gave you at the end of the line, one of them is Asakta b'Perivirivya. Were you involved in procreation? It doesn't say Kiyamta. It says Asakta. Were you involved? That's your obligation. That's the extent of your obligation. If this is true, then presumably you don't have any obligation to use artificial mechanisms to make sure that you have a boy and a girl. You just do the best you can naturally, and Hashem will take care of the rest. The Hartzvi, or Tzvi Beis Frank, has a middle position, which I'm partial to, is that neither of them are right, not Tosfos, or maybe this is what Tosfos means, but not the way Tosfos is classically understood. I don't think exactly what Tosfos means. It might be what other Rishonim mean, nor what the Minchas Chinuch means. I won't read it inside, but I'll tell you what he says. The Hartzvi says, no, the mitzvah of Puravu is, as we just said, to be actively involved in trying to have children. It's not the sexual act, nor is it the result. It's what he called a mitzvah nimshechet. It's a continuous mitzvah to be involved in Puravu. So he said, how does that explain the data? Right? Well, he said, look, right, think about what the data says, right? If the children died, so now I'm obligated again. How am I obligated again? Well, you had a mitzvah nimshechet. You had a continuous mitzvah while your children were alive, so you didn't have to do anything, right? The mitzvah was being kept, right? You did everything you could. You're raising your children. You're helping your children. They're alive, right? If they die, it's not like the mitzvah comes back out of nowhere, but you were always obligated. It just happened to be when your children were alive, so you didn't have to do anything more. Now, why is this formulation important for him? So he suggests, there's a shaila, that in the poskim, do you fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu with IVF, right? Not the gender choosing. You can't have children naturally. You have it through IVF with your wife, right? Not with donor sperm, right? The husband and wife have a child using IVF. Do they fulfill the mitzvah? So, if you skip to 9 for a moment, this is a suffix in the Chelkas Mechokek. I won't go into all the background. But the case in Poskim is what's called this Abra Be'ambati, right? What if, it comes from a case of, a weird case in the Gemara, but what if a woman becomes pregnant, which they thought was possible, I don't think it's possible, or very rare, or beyond rare, becomes impregnated from sperm that's floating in the bathtub, right, with no act of sexual intercourse. Does she or not fulfill the mitzvah of Puravu? So this is a machlokas in the Rishonim, it's a machlokas in the Achronim, but the Hartzvi and Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Yitzchak Weiss and the Minchas Yitzchak all say that regardless of that suffix, regardless of whether you think you fulfill Puravu when a woman accidentally becomes impregnated from sperm floating there in the bathtub, everyone would agree you will fulfill the mitzvah if you go through the process of IVF. Why? Because he says, look, if you think the mitzvah is the act, the sexual act, like Tosfos, so then a couple who had a child through IVF would not fulfill Puravu. If you think like the Minchas Chinuch, so presumably you would fulfill Puravu. But he said, I think it's in the middle. You're not obligated to bring about a result. You're obligated to do whatever action you can to have children. Now, if it happens to be that by accident the woman becomes pregnant from sperm that's floating in the bathtub, so that was passive. But if you go through IVF, right, you do an act, even if it's not the sexual act, but it's an act of ensuring you have a child, so that's called a ma'aseh mitzvah, and therefore you will fulfill the mitzvah. And that's the position of the Hartzvi, that's the position of Rav Moshe Feinstein, that's the position of Yitzchak Weiss, and others. And most poskim rule like this, that a couple, both of those points, most poskim paskin, A, you do fulfill Puravu through IVF, and two, they don't think you're obligated to try to have a boy and a girl through artificial means. They think you're obligated to do your best, but that stops short of manipulating what sex of child you have. They say you're not obligated to go through IVF. If you do, you fulfilled Puravu, and the child is yours, but you're not obligated to do that. That's what most poskim say. Not all poskim. If you look in the Mishpatei Uziel in number 11, Rav Uziel says you do not fulfill Puravu. He rejects this. He's a minority position, but he says you do not fulfill it. In 12, as Dr. Friedman noted, there is another possibility, though according to the Shutpua, this is the only person who said it, though I happen to think it's somewhat compelling. Rav Yaakov Ariel in the Shutpua Allah Shel Torah, number 12, says that even if you don't fulfill Purvu through IVF, you might fulfill a secondary mitzvah, which is either Derabanan or the Ratzon HaTorah or something called Sheves. Right, that there's a generic idea, the Torah said, as the Gemara said, to make sure that the world is populated. So Rav Yaakov Ariel says, even if you didn't fulfill Purvu technically, you did fulfill Sheves, this more generic idea. The Tzitzel Yezer also thinks you aren't Mekayim Purvu. Okay. What? Right, Al Tanach is yet another level of it, right? He doesn't get into it. Rankin is more of a Chival Al Tanach, but yeah, which is yet another principle, which may or may not be related. Okay, now, so why is this important? So again, so according to the Minchas Chinuch, you're obligated to make sure you have a boy and a girl. So you might say that manipulating what sex the child will be is a kiyum ha-mitzvah. According to Bali Atosis, for sure you're not obligated to do that, because the act of Puravu is simply the sexual act. According to Har Tzvi, you could have argued that you're obligated to make sure you have a boy and a girl, but most of the postmen assume that's not true. You're just obligated to do whatever you can to have children, not necessarily a boy and a girl. That's just the point at which you become exempt. So that's sort of factor one that the poskim deal with in terms of figuring out, is there a halachic value to trying to manipulate the what sex the child will be. Now that brings us really to the first halachic opposition, right? Why would you say it's usur to choose the sex of the child? So, as we noted, both IVF and IUI, right, require the man to require the sperm outside the body, right? Which involves potential issues of hashchas zer levatala, right? Of destroying the sperm, because even though you're using some of it, obviously, you're not using all of it, and then normally that's not a problem when you're involved in the sexual act, but here it's outside the context of the sexual act, so you need a justification, according to most poskim, you need some sort of justification to do it. Now, if you think, like the Minchas Chinuch, that you're obligated to make sure you have a boy and a girl, so then this should override, it's not levatala anymore, right? It's not in vain. You're obligated to do this. You're obligated to do whatever you can to make sure you have a boy and a girl. So even though, yes, you're going to have to, right, you're going to have to get the sperm outside the context of the sexual act, even though often what we do is we have a special condom which collects it so that it's sort of in the context of the sexual act, but that's a shiur for another time of exactly how we do it. If you think that part of Puravu is ensuring you have a boy and a girl, so then presumably the fact that you lose some of the sperm in the context of IVF or IUI is irrelevant, because it's not levatala, it's not in vain, it's in pursuit of the mitzvah. If you think that you have no such obligation, right, so then you might think that while it's permitted maybe to go through IVF or IUI in order to have children, bichlal, if your only motivation of doing this is to make sure you have a preferred sex, so that's already in vain, because it's not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that's one of the concerns that the poskim bring up. I gave you some sources. We're not going to have time to read through all of them, but basically 14 through 18 deal with that question. Most poskim assume that if you hold like the Minchas Chinuch, then for sure it's not Hashchas HaZera. However, that's not true. The Divrei Malkiel actually argues on that and thinks that you do fulfill Puravu through IVF, and it's still Usur because of Hashchas HaZera, but he's unique in this regard, and he's been rejected, really. Most poskim fall either saying, we don't think you fulfill Puravu, and therefore you can never do IVF, which is Ravuziel. Most poskim say you do fulfill Puravu, and therefore you're allowed to do it. But, as we said, it's an open question about whether that would be true if you're only going through IUI or IVF to choose the sex of the child. So that's going to be halachic problem number one. The second problem is a hashkafic e problem. I don't know what to call it exactly, but if you skip to 19, this is what's called the playing God problem. So there's a prohibition we know called tilayim, right? You can't mix, right? Shatnez, what we call, but you also can't crossbreed animals. Now, why can't you crossbreed animals? So according to Rashi, it's a chok, right? Number 20, right? Et chukotai dishmaru ve'elu hein behem techalo tarbiya kilayim chukim elu gzeirat melech shein tamu davar. There's no reason for it. It's what we call a chok, right? There are different ways of understanding chok, but the way Rashi understands chok, there is no reason that we can understand. That's why you can't crossbreed. But the Ramban gives two reasons. First, he brings that it's a gzeirat melech, but he says ve'ena kavana behem shetia gzeirat melech malchem lochem b'shum makom b'lom tam. It doesn't mean that it's a meaningless gzeira. Because everything God said is pure. Chok is just when God doesn't tell you the reason, but there is a reason. So why is it a violation of kilayim? Why is kilayim aser? Ki Hashem bara haminim ba'olam b'chol balei nevashot b'tzmachim balei nefesh atznuah. God created a certain number of animals, a certain number of species of plants. And gave them the power of procreation so that the world will continue with these species forever until God decides to destroy the world. And he said they should give birth to their species. And when you crossbreed, and you're playing with God. You're creating new things that God didn't want. You're playing God. That's why it's aser. Then if you skip to the next page, then he gives another possibility, a Kabbalistic possibility. You don't want to mix these forces that come together. I don't know exactly what that means, but some mystical reason that the crossbreeding sort of violates. Okay, so the second concern that Post can bring up is not the Hashkasa Zera, because maybe you're not obligated to do it. The second is this playing God, right? Who are you to play God, right? We learn from Kilayim, you're not supposed to play God, and therefore you also shouldn't be playing with what sex your child will be. You do whatever you can, right? But don't start playing around with God's world. Now, respond to that, right? Defend why choosing the sex of your child is not a problem because of this. Good. So the first thing that I think is just obvious, and this is actually a point that Dr. Steinberg makes in the context of cloning, is that cloning can't. Some of the posts can say, "Oh, cloning is a problem of playing God." But Dr. Steinberg said, "What are you talking about? Cloning isn't a problem of playing God. You're not." The Ramban says, "What is playing God? Creating a new species? You're not creating a new species. You're creating the same species." Right, you're continuing God's species. So I would have said oto davar for choosing the sex of your child. Elamai, Dr. Steinberg himself, while he permits cloning, he forbids choosing the sex of your child. Okay.
What?
He has an article on the topic where he says it's usher. He's it always
PGD,
IUI, natural methods. He hates it all. He doesn't say it's usher, he says it's a... I would oppose it. I oppose it strongly, because Rav Shlomo Zalman did, as we'll see. Well, that's not true. Rav Neuwirth does, right, as we'll see. I was very surprised, because it doesn't work with his two arguments, but in an article he has in Asya, he opposes choosing the sex of your child through IUI, PGD, or natural methods. He doesn't even like the natural methods, like Rav Neuwirth, as we'll see. But cloning he's totally okay with. So I'm not... So maybe he's changed his mind.
100%.
I think I even put it here. Did I put it here?
He's a
did I put it here?
Proponent of PGD.
Okay, for sex choosing.
Or for medical.
Oh, so we'll come back to medical. That's going to be the exception. But in his for non-medical reasons, he opposes it. Like for not disease related.
No.
For the choosing the sex of the child. We'll come back to the medical one. But choosing the sex of the child, as we'll see, he opposes it, which is a bit. surprising. Now, one critique, as Dr. Friedman said, is this doesn't seem to be a problem of playing God. I'll raise a few more critiques. Another critique is, according to, who says we pass like the Ramban? Paskin. Who says the hashkafa behind is what the Ramban says? Rashi says it's a chok. If it's a chok, you can't apply it anywhere else. Not only that, the Ramban himself isn't married to this logic of playing God because he gives two reasons. So I would have told you, what are you talking about, right? And I'll give you a few proofs. I won't read them inside. In 23, this comes up for some reason often, this discussion, is this machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Turnus Rufus, right? Is the fact that there are poor people in the world, doesn't that prove God wants them to be poor? Isn't a problem that you're giving them staka, right? You're going against what God wants, and Rabbi Kiva says, no, he gives a whole logic, no, God wants us to help because poor people are his children, and therefore he wants us to help his children. So everyone points to this and says, you have this argument where Turnus Rufus is saying, as the world is, the world must stay, and Rabbi Kiva says, no, what are you talking about? We're allowed to manipulate the world. Right? We always do this. You want another proof? In 25, in the context of Puruvu itself, I'll just tell the story. The Gemara tells the story that Adishayahu came into Chizkiyahu when he was dying, and he said to Chizkiyahu, you know why you're dying? Because you don't want to have children. And Chizkiyahu says, of course I don't want to have children. I saw Benevuam, you have Menashe, who is like the worst person who ever lived. I don't want to have children. And he says to him in his famous line, "Hani b'hani kishay derachman alamali." Who are you? What do you care? That's God's business, right? Ma denicha kamei kuchu brichu leo. He says, "Bahadi kishay derachman alamalach." The second line, what do you care about these secrets of God? Ma denifkader ibayrach lemevad. What you're obligated to do, do. And what God wants to do, he'll do. Right? So on the one hand, Yeshayahu is telling him, don't be such a chacham. Do what you're supposed to do and that's it. Right? Let God take care of it. But then what's the next line? So Amar Lei, Hashta Havli Brateich. He said, look, okay, I'll have children, but let me marry your daughter, Esher de Garma de Schusa Didi, Vididach, Venachim in Benin Malu, and maybe our joint schus will change the future, and I won't have Menashe. So on the one hand, the Gemara says that Yeshayahu says, no, you just do whatever you want, you don't try to play with things. Chizkiyahu says, okay, I won't play with it too much, but I'll play with it a little bit, right? I'll try to play with things. In a Hanami, I'll play through it with schus, and I'll get God to do it, but already, you see, there's this tension in the Gemara itself, where Yeshayahu is like, straight ahead, nothing can change. Chizkiyahu is like, okay, I can't change too much, but we'll play with it a little bit, which already you see a tension about this. In a amazingly, an incredible passage, I don't know if you've seen this before, this is one of the craziest passages ever. You think it's a forgery, but it's not. Number 24, this is quoted in the cloning discussion. The Me'iri, in the halacha, in the Sugya of Kishuf, in Sanhedrin, says the following. I'll read it to you because otherwise you won't believe that he said this. He said, "Bein shay mechashev isha, isha kulon miskila. You kill a witch. V'lo nemar mechashefa lo sechayeh, elasha kishuv matzu binashim. Witches are mostly women, that's why we say it. Okay, fine. V'divar kazev v'hova. V'chol maisa sheidim, areu v'chalak trafim. All demon work is magic. Koshu nasa b'pula tiv'it, eno v'chalak trafim. But anything that's done naturally is not magic. What's his example? Afilu yodei livro briot yafot shelo mizivug hamin. Even if one day they'll know how to create people without the sexual act. Kemoshen odav v'sifrei ha-teva shein ha-davar nimnaz. We already know it's possible. It's theoretically possible, according to our scientists, right? 13th century Provence. You will be able to clone one day without the sexual act, no problem, right? Great. If it ever happens. Right, okay. What? I'm not an expert on the golem, any of the golems, not the Maharals, not the Chavos Yoyers, not anybody, I don't know. But that may not be human, but this is human, right? He says you'll be able to create people one day without the sexual act. He's telling you, Shehu TV, Einu B'chol HaKishuv, it's not going to be magic. It'll be permitted completely. Right? So everyone in the cloning discussion is like, look, the Me'iri 700 years ago said cloning is permitted. How he knew it would exist, I have no idea. But Me'iri was a Navi. Okay, fine. Shine. Whatever. So on the one hand, you might say, oh, it's playing God. On the other hand, it's not really playing God. You're not creating a new Bria. And besides, it's science. And the Meiri says anything that's scientific is permitted. It's not under this prohibition. And besides, Rashi doesn't think the problem of Kilayim is playing God. So how do you know it's a problem at all? And even the Ramban himself isn't married to this Svara. But that's problem two that people raise. On the other hand, in terms of the natural methods, the Gemara itself knew that there were natural methods and endorsed them. You look in 26. The Gemara says that based on their science of exact how they believe that children came into being, I'll leave out their science, but you just look after the ellipsis. Amar Rava harotz lots of kolbanav zcharim givol v'yishne. If you want to make sure that all your children are male, so then you should engage in the sexual act twice, right? Givol v'yishne. Right? Again, without getting to the science of how that works, the point is the Gemara knew about natural methods and endorsed them, right? So, at least for natural methods, you seem to have precedent in the Gemara itself. One more halachic problem that's brought up, at least in the case of IVF, but this is really, I'll raise it and then reject it, is number 28, is you might think that, you know, if the only way to have children is IVF, so then, look, you're allowed to create these zygotes, these embryos, even though you're going to throw a lot of them out or just not use them. But if it's only to choose the sex of the child, so then you're throwing out these zygotes for no reason. It's a, you know, it's a problem. It's abortion of sorts or something like that. That the postum says is not a problem because we assume until 40 days it's maya ba'oma, and therefore until 40 days the zygote is not halachically significant, and therefore it's not a problem. Maybe it's some sort of minor problem of like, you know, whatever. Okay. Correct. Many of the posts can bring this up. Okay. So once we have this, right? So well, let's take it all together now, right? With our understanding of how you may or may not need to be Mekayim Peruvu, with our understanding of this playing God, with the understanding of Hashchasa Zera, right? What do the poskim say lemaisa? So, Rav Shlomo Zalman is quoted in number 27, Nishmas Avram, that in order to have children, right, if you can't have children without IUI or IVF, it's permitted, you're Mekayim Peruvu, and there's no problem of Hashchasa Zera. But in order to determine the sex of the child, Rav Shlomo Zalman says that is unnecessary halachically, and therefore it's hashchasa zera to engage in the sperm collection for IUI and IVF, and therefore, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman, both IUI and IVF are out of the question for choosing the gender of the child because it's not necessary. Therefore, it's hashchasa zera. He doesn't weigh in on medical issues. But as we'll see, many posts, almost everyone is going to say that if there's a medical reason that you're doing this, right? There's a, you know.
The question that they ask, like here, it begins with a question, right? In this article?
This is Nishmas Avram. Sorry, this is in the Nishmas Avram.
Post this question. What is the.
Right, you know, it's always this question. I asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, and right. This is what he told me.
What is that with medical? What are you talking about for.
Just choosing the gender of the child, just the sex of the child. That was his context. The medical one is not in this piece. Yeah. We don't know. We just know that he said just for choosing the sex of the child, he thought that was Hashchasa Zera. Okay, if you go to 29 now, I gave you the summary. So, right, Borstein posed this to many poskim in Eretz Yisrael. And now we're going to bring it all together. So he asked Rav Shua Neuwirth, right, the order of Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Uniquely, Rav Neuwirth says, all three of them are Aser. All three of them are Aser. Even the natural method is Aser. It's against the Gemara, too bad. Right? Rav Neuwirth says, I gave you an English translation, my translation, he says, right, it pains me you're dealing with hidden things, meaning Kivshei Derachmana. Right? You should help people with marital issues, not things like this. We do our part and leave the rest up to God. And therefore, Rav Neuwirth says, because of the playing God thing, it's Aser to do any of them. The natural methods, IUI, IVF, whatever God gives you, Zeu, that's it. Rav Yaakov Ariel adds that you have no obligation to do it, but Rav Yaakov Ariel does clarify. I don't know if Rav Neuwirth would agree with this or not, but he doesn't say it. Rav Yaakov Ariel says it's forbidden, even method one, unless it's for medical reasons. For medical reasons, he says that's not, you're not playing God for no reason. You're doing it to prevent a genetic disease that's carried on the Y chromosome. So that, Rav Yaakov Ariel says, is mutter, but everything else, even the natural methods, he opposes because you're playing God. Rav Yitzchak Zilmerstein says the same thing. Okay? Those are the most extreme. Right? That barring medical issues, you can't choose the sex of your child, not naturally, not with IUI, not with IVF, because you're playing God. Most poskim reject that extreme position. For example, Shlomo Amar says that the natural methods, no problem at all. The Gemara says you can do the natural methods, right? And they're not that effective anyways. I mean, what are you doing? You're playing a little bit with it. That's fine. God will do what he does, and you can, you know, play with it a little bit, but that's the natural methods, diet, position, fine. The other two, he says, IUI, IVF, just for the purpose of choosing the sex of your child, he thinks the problem because of the Ramban, because you're choosing, you're playing God. But he will consider allowing IUI and IVF for health reasons, for procreation, for pururvu, he does think that's legitimate, right? Or even for shalom bayis, right? So he's relatively makil, right? He says, don't choose the sex of the child for no reason, for preference. But if you have basically any justification, he would allow you even to do IUI and IVF, and he would say that's no problem. And Rav Meir Mazuz is a little bit more limited. He allows IUI and IVF for any health reason. But, you know, as I said, Rav Amar is even more expansive. Let me just read through these quickly. Rav Nevensal doesn't really paskin. He just says, the natural method is better than IUI, and IUI is better than IVF. I'm not weighing in it. I'm just telling you, in the order of preference, I'm sure that the first one's okay, the next one I'm less sure, the next one less sure. I'm not really sure what to conclude, but that's the gradations. Rav Dov Lior says that the natural methods are fine, but he notes it's not obligatory. Right? He says you don't have to do it, right? You're only obligated to do mitzvot naturally. And he suggests that not to get involved in it at all until you've already had three children of the same sex, because then you already have a chazaka that you're already having boys, so then you can start playing with it. But again, to prevent medical issues, he would endorse it. Reb Rabinovich has medical concerns for two and three. But Ray Steinberg, Dr. Steinberg notes that the dangers of IVF and PGD in general and PGD are negligible and doesn't think that's a concern. But Rabinovich says, look, it's true that they're negligible, so I'll allow you to do it to have children. But there's no compelling reason to choose the sex of your child. So if the only reason you're doing IUI and IVF is to choose the sex of your child, that doesn't override even the minor medical danger that there is. Dr. Steinberg, you're right, I'm sorry, he doesn't say it's totally us, right? Take that back. He suggests a balanced approach. He really doesn't love it, and he suggests avoiding it for a series of reasons. And these are some of the issues you'll find in the ethical writings and legal writings, is the concern that it'll lead to eugenics, right? To, you know, today it's choosing the sex of the child, tomorrow it's choosing the eye color. It leads to discrimination of the sex. There's a little bit of danger, there's favoritism. He also has a sort of policy problem that if, you know, the allocation of resources, right, it's very expensive. So if you're involved in IVF in order to have children, so maybe that's worth the public expense, especially in Israel where IVF is funded by the government. But just to choose the sex of your child, he says, well, you know, it's just not so necessary. So he's very hesitant about it. Definitely if it's non-medical issues. Rav Moira Dechai Eliyahu allows you to be makil if you've already had five children in a row of the same sex, and Rav Ovadia allows the IVF PGD sex selection after you've had six children of one sex, and adding that the parents would refuse to have a seventh child unless you let them do it, then he'll allow you to do it. So this is sort of the range that you have. In terms of the Cohen case, many of them oppose it. Rav Lichtenstein, 31, said that he thinks it's probably mutter. He has doubts about it, but I understand the complexity of the issue and the feelings that it arouses. So some of the poskim endorse it, some of them do not. Rabbi Dr. Judah Goldberg makes a point in tradition which I think is worth considering, though he's the only person who says it, which is that he's not sure why the question of whether you're obligated to have a boy and a girl is relevant for this discussion. He says the fact that having a boy and a girl are part of the halachic discussion should be enough to tell you that it's at least a halachic value, even if not an obligation. And if it's a halachic value, why shouldn't that override things like hashchas zera? Because it's not levatala anymore, right? If the ethos of halacha is that you're supposed to have a boy and a girl, that should push you in that direction. He says, I'm not poskening, but I think it is something to take into account. So this is basically the survey, is that you have many poskim who really oppose it sort of bicharifut, some poskim who are lenient about it, some who have a mixed position. I've given you the list, just very quickly, because we only have 2 minutes. In Canada, the law is actually extreme. In Canada, choosing the sex of your child through IVF is extremely illegal. It carries with it up to a 10-year jail sentence and $500,000 fine because of the concerns of eugenics. In America, it's permitted. So you see that in Israel, I gave you in 35, has taken basically all these concerns we've seen and has created a very balanced approach where they will allow you to do it after you've, either if there's medical, for medical reasons, basically everyone allows it, but even for non-medical reasons, they'll allow you if you've already had 4 children or the Cohen case, but only if you have a consultation with a group of 7 people, which include ethicists and a social worker and a lawyer and a clergyman. I mean, what they're trying to do is sort of bring together the concerns and not be cavalier about it, but not totally forbid it, and create sort of a middle position, which, to be fair, is sort of in line with what many of the post-skim said. The last thing I'll tell you in this last line is, in addition to all the halachic and meta-halachic concerns that post-skim brought in favor and against, Rav Yuval Sherlo was asked about it in a brilliant article. He doesn't poskin, but he notes that in addition to the halachic issues, there's policy issues to take into account. And he says what you have to do is you have to realize that halacha in general tries to balance 3 types of concerns. Whenever we want to forbid something because of gzeira, which is essentially what this would be, right? If you don't think it's technically usur, you're just concerned of what it'll lead to, so you're saying it's a gzeira. Well, what are the rules for gzeira? So he said on the one hand, Chazal only make gzeirot when the likelihood of the bad event is common. It's what we call milsad lo shchicha lo gazur be'rabanan. So if you want to say that choosing the sex of your child for preference reasons or whatever should be usur because it'll lead to eugenics, right? Figure out how likely is that? How many people go through IVF to begin with? How many people are willing to pay the expense? How likely is it that this one couple is going to snowball out of effect? You have to ask that question, come up with a statistic. 2, Chazal bring up, they only are gozer if the result is really bad. So for example, in gozer gzera l'gzera, if the bad result is 2 steps removed, so we don't set up a decree, that means that we only set up sort of slippery slope arguments when the concern is right in front of us, not if it's down the road. Unless it's a makom kares, right? We do have gzera l'gzera by kares. What does that teach you? He says that what that teaches you is that if the result would be really, really bad, then sometimes you can even set up multiple layers of protection. So how bad do you think the possible eugenics would be, right? If it's really bad, so maybe it's worth setting up these, you know, prohibitive decrees. And the third is, he said, the principles of things like hefsid and the like teach us that we don't set up gzerot if the quality of life to the person who is the gzera is being imposed on right now would be extreme. So how much pain are you causing these parents who already had 4, 5, 6 children of the same sex by telling them they can't have one? He doesn't answer conclusively, but he said those are the types of questions you have to ask, not on the halachic level, but on the policy level, when you're trying to figure out, is it worth it to set up safeguards if you think it's not actually usur, right? How worried are you that this will lead to eugenics? How bad, right, of a result do you really think is going to happen? And how much are you torturing these parents now who are doing it for legitimate reasons, right? They already have 4, 5, 6 kids. They just want, you know, a girl, and they only have boys. You know, how much worse are you making their life by making them not have the child that they want because of some future concern? Those are the types of concerns to bring in. So, again, as we've seen, both the policy, the halachic and hashkafic issues here are so complex that you get postum really across the spectrum, from those saying it's usur in non-medical issues to choose the sex of the child even through natural methods, to those who say everything is fine because there is no such problem, and everything in between. But this is one of those issues where, because it's such a new shaila, and it's never, you know, it's only like, you know, it means only in the last few years, you see that the postum are still struggling, just like ethicists in general, and they're really across the board, both in the halakhic issues and the ethical issues. And I assume as things progress even more, the postum will continue to flesh it out, and maybe consensus will emerge, and maybe it won't. But at any rate, it highlights the complexity of these types of modern medical issues, and we're already late for Myers, so let's run.